talking with Jeffrey Seller, off the air and now on the air, the acclaimed Broadway producer. Have you heard of Rent or Hamilton? I could go on. His memoir is Theater Kid, a Broadway memoir, and it's the story of his life growing up in the most unconventional of circumstances and becoming one of America's premier producers. This is the guy that was in the room. Jeffrey Seller is in our studio. Thanks for being here.
John, it's so great to be here today on this freezing Chicago Monday.
You asked me off the air, do guys like you ever get a chance to read just for pleasure? And I said no. But actually, it's yes, because I only read the books that I think I will enjoy and that I might be able to share with my listeners. And this is a little unconventional for us. I don't do a lot of theater talk. But Theater Kid, a Broadway memoir, is your life story. And it is so eloquently told, even if it wasn't about being a Broadway producer, even if we didn't know you would go on to be the guy that made Hamilton and Rent happen, we would want to read this story because you just tell it so authentically, so convincingly. Your memory power is amazing. Are all the things you remembered in this book true?
100%. You know, I'm a 60-year-old guy now, but I will be honest about one thing. Several of these stories from my early childhood, I actually wrote in my 20s.
You've been sitting on them.
And I went, when I was in my 20s and I was a booking agent and I was working in the theater and all that, I took creative writing classes and I wrote a few of these stories and I put them in a drawer. And I knew that someday I wanted to write the big story, but I was afraid and I didn't know how to do it. So they just sat in the drawer for over 20 years.
Well, I have recently looked back at some of the things I wrote in college and I'm aghast at how bad it was. I thought I was a good writer and then I read what I was writing then when I thought I was good and realized I wasn't.
Oh, I also mined the journals I kept in college. And when I went back, I was thrilled by the details I got of things I'd forgotten, and I was also aghast at the quality of the writing.
Good.
So it is
a skill.
100%.
Develop over the years. Well, you're obviously a gifted writer. You're also talented on stage, but would you say your greatest gift, though, is behind the scenes as a producer?
Yeah, I'm an idea guy. I think my greatest gift probably is bringing people together who are talented, and when I get them in the room together and they start working, what comes out is greater than anything any of them could do individually.
Well, there's a scene early on. Were you in high school then or early in college where you and a friend coached a young woman in a scene and you guys describe for her the emotions she needs to pull up and then the way she should display them. And you felt like you were watching this happen when you read the passage. And this actress then delivered the scene in a way that she didn't think she was capable of. And you thought, wow, the talent is on both sides of the room, isn't it?
Well, that is my best friend at the time, Andrew Lippa, the composer lyricist of Big Fish, The Addams Family, and The Wild Party. And we are coaching a fantastic sophomore named Judy Craig in There Are Worse Things I Could Do from Greece. And in that wonderful moment, I was a junior at Michigan. I wanted her to express like that pain of being ridiculed because she had the temerity, you know, because she was having sex with another guy or maybe got pregnant. And I thought, I really want to see that pain. And Judy was a church singer. And I thought, I want her to blow the roof off this theater.
So how did you get her to do that?
She had recently been suffering from abdominal pain and had to go to the doctor and find out if she had cancer. And I asked her, can you call up how you were feeling between when you were tested and when you got the results?
The anxiety, the fear.
Yeah.
And then she delivered. And it was more than just that, but that was one of the coaching mechanisms. Splattering paint against a wall was another technique you told her to imagine doing as the emotion poured forth, and she said, "Oh my God, that's the best acting lesson I've ever had." And it was you, a junior at Michigan. So maybe the light bulb went on then, if it hadn't already. But really, theater was already in your life. As a child, you were writing plays, and it really gave you a sense of purpose and confidence as a kid, right?
It gave not only purpose to my life, but structure. Making a play is like, it's like making life. It's making something from nothing. And it is so fun when you bring together a playwright, a director, an actor, a set designer, and then everybody's working on the same project. I suppose people who are making cars have the same thrill.
To see it come together.
I suppose people who are building great works of architecture have the same thrill. And that is, I think, the greatest thing I've enjoyed in my life is making stuff.
Yeah. The book is about the stuff you've made and how you got to the position where you would be such a significant player. But it's also about your personal journey, your sexual awakening.
Yeah.
There was a party that they had maybe again in junior high. It was one of those make-out parties.
Yeah.
And afterwards, no. And then there was a scene where they're all sitting around in a circle. I know you know this. And they say,
that seems true too.
Let's all say something positive.
You'll have to bleep it. That stuff you do when you are 14 years old.
So everybody's sitting in the circle and they're going to say something positive and something unfortunate. And what does one of the girls say to you in front of everybody?
Jeff, I just need you to know something. You're gay.
How old are you at the time? 14?
I actually was still 13.
So what was your reaction?
Lori Resnick.
Lori, if you're
listening, I won't forget her name.
312-981-7200. So she says that. Did you agree with that at the time?
No, here's the truth. I didn't yet know it myself. And that was an honest. So when I didn't just bristle. The blood from my face drained, and I'm sure my ears got red. And I said, "No, I'm not." And she goes, "It's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. I just want you to know, but that's what you are." And I said, "No, I'm not." And, you know, like in I didn't know what they were talking about because I hadn't done that yet. Because I was slow at the adolescent puberty thing. So at age 13, I had never had that experience either.
But you came from a poor neighborhood that had a colloquial pejorative attached to it that you resented. And these kids, I thought, were going to descend on you and be unkind. But they weren't. Even your friends, when you were walking home, who evidently weren't gay, said, "It's okay. We don't care. Don't worry about that." Do you remember it that way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was happy to see the treatment you got.
My best friend, Bruce Rosen, still lives in the Detroit area. He was a jock. He was the baseball player. He was the football player. He was the guy who was always trying to get another girl to go around. In fact, Lori Resnick was his girlfriend.
All right, enough of Lori.
But yeah, Bruce said to me an hour later, he goes, "By the way, I don't care what Lori said."
Yeah.
I don't care.
I was happy to hear that coming from young people at that age in the 1970s.
This is 1978.
Yeah, right.
It's the summer of Saturday Night Fever.
It's also the eve of AIDS, right?
It's right before. I do come out and start my first relationship with another man in 1984, and AIDS is in full. The word bloom is too nice a word. It's devastating.
Jeffrey Seller, the theater kid, his Broadway memoir is just out now, and it's a fast, fun, furious read. A lot of revelations, a lot of candor, a lot of, I don't think I would have said that in this book, but there he was saying all of that. Okay, so let's cut to a couple of the big moments in your life. Talk to me about Rent and how you came upon that show.
So I'm 25 years old and I'm working in a Broadway office as a booking agent. I don't like my job anymore. I'm a booking agent. It pays the bills, pays my student loans, pays the rent, but it doesn't give me pleasure. And I want to be a producer, and I don't know how to make the transition. I'm like, I'm never going to be a producer. I'm never going to be able to raise any money. I've just broken up from a 6-year relationship, and I'm afraid I'm never going to meet anybody again, and I'm lonely, and life sucks. And my friend says, hey, I'm going to this this show tonight. It's called Boho Days. And I look at the flyer, and it says, Boho Days, a rock monologue by Jonathan Larson. And I'm like, rock monologue? I've never heard that before. And I'm like, so I guess it's a one-man show, and I guess he's going to sing it in rock instead of words. So we go to this show, and out comes this tall, lanky, curly-haired guy. He attacks the piano ferociously. And what is he? A 30-year-old composer of rock musicals that nobody wants to produce. He's a guy who's in a relationship with a woman that he likes, but he knows she's not the one. And the question is, do I have the guts to break up, or do I stay because it's safe? And of course, he lives in a fourth-floor walk-up bathtub in the kitchen. And he's asking himself, do I keep writing these musicals that nobody wants to produce, or should I take a job as a copywriter? Because I'll finally get health insurance and maybe a salary. And it's in these songs that's making the hair on my arms raise. I'm cheering. I'm crying. And I go, how does this guy I've never heard before in my life, I've never heard of him, and he's writing my life story?
Jonathan Larson.
Jonathan. So I write him a letter the next day, and I say, I want to produce your musicals. Jump 2 weeks later. Sitting in my office, the booking office, the booking agency I work for. And as I'm eating lunch, my boss comes in with an envelope, the little one. And she says, we need to talk. You don't want to be a booker. You want to be a producer. You don't belong here anymore. So we're letting you go. And I look at the envelope. She says, here's 2 weeks severance and you can go. And I said, so I guess I'm done on Friday. She said, no, you can leave now. And as she says that, the all call comes in from the intercom, from the receptionist, and they go, Jeffrey, Jonathan Larson on line 3. Mm. And I meet Jonathan Larson the next day.
There's a scene that I met Kevin McCullum and knew him from Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And he told the story about how when you're doing a read through, when they're sort of showing it off,
yeah,
you or somebody turns to somebody else and says, get the checkbook.
Oh, that's what Kevin said to me.
Kevin said that to you. Okay, but that's in the book. And
oh, yeah.
I thought, well, sure, anybody that debuts for a private audience you rent would go, I'm rich. This is a $1 billion production. But actually, the first time, you all thought it was a bust.
That's right. That was when I brought Kevin, my business partner. He was my business partner for 20 years, and I adore him. And I went to see the very first time Jonathan put together a reading of Rent in 1993, and it was at New York Theater Workshop, 100 seats, hot.
Hotter than hell in there.
No air conditioning.
Everybody's sweating.
I bring two guys. I find this guy. I meet this guy that actually Kevin introduced me to. His name was Peter. He was from Australia. Tall, handsome guy. His mother was rich. And I thought, if I can get him interested, he'll give us the dough.
There you go. You're a producer.
He leaves at intermission and says, I'm sorry, I didn't know it was going to go on this long. It was the Australian nice way of saying, your show is no good and I can't get out of this hot theater fast enough. And then there's another guy I bring who was like a director wannabe type. And he waits till the end of the performance 3 hours later to go, Jonathan's talented, but I think he should just give this up and start something new.
Rent.
Rent.
What changed?
Jonathan found the story. In that first iteration, it was like a collage of life in the East Village.
But you had the songs, right?
Some, but not all. Not all of the songs.
Was Seasons of Love in that first
version? I don't remember. There's one moment, John, where my memory is flagging. I don't know. But he had some. I remember Rent was in it and Santa Fe was in it.
Yeah.
I don't feel like Light My Candle was in it yet. And I don't feel like Seasons of Love was in it yet. But it just shows you how do you find the story so that it has a compelling middle, beginning, middle, and end. And he didn't at first.
Talk to me about Hamilton. How did that land on your doorstep?
Well, I had already done In the Heights with Lynn. Kevin and I had produced In the Heights. And the first time I heard the first song of In the Heights, of Lynn's In the Heights. Once again, this guy comes out and he's singing the most amazing, warm Caribbean rap, lights up on Washington Heights up at the break of day. And it's so embracing. And then this Broadway chorus comes behind him singing In the Heights. And I had never heard this mashup of rap and Broadway choral singing. And I was like, this guy is brilliant.
But where that show you said was warm, you said that Hamilton was a theatrical missile. What did you mean by that?
It was like a lightning strike. Like if that was warm, Hamilton was whop.
It was.
And
did you worry about the casting of Hamilton?
Never. You cast in the same way Rent. You know, we cast.
But you didn't have to go off race for some of the principal characters. It was a decision you all made.
The decision is who is the right artist to sing this rap. And doesn't it make sense that it would be a black man to sing George Washington when you listen to the rap and you're going to cast a black man to sing it?
I guess so.
It was organic.
Yeah.
Listen to the rap of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
Listen to how he sings, and you're going to use a black person to do it.
What was your favorite part of that show? Was it the king? Was it Jefferson? Was it Hamilton? Was it the ladies?
I remember being blown away when Aaron Burr sings Wait For It. When Aaron Burr is struggling with his love and hate for Alexander Hamilton, his admiration for Alexander Hamilton, and his frustration toward Alexander Hamilton, and how all of that is tied up in this one man's journey in which he puts a lid on it and says, wait.
Theater Kid is Jeffrey Sellers' Broadway memoir. He's in our studio, the producer of these shows. Hamilton is going to come back to Chicago at the exclusion of the Kennedy Center?
Their loss is our Chicago gain.
And why is it not going to play at the Kennedy Center?
Because Donald Trump acted with a coup. He took over. He got rid of their professional executive director, Deborah Rutter, from Chicago. He got rid of their bipartisan chairman of the board, David Rubenstein, had been working with Democrats and Republicans his whole life.
But a lot of those people were appointed by previous presidents. It's the purview of the president, is it not? I just wonder if you would not be so offended.
The Kennedy Center was founded under Dwight Eisenhower, built under Richard Nixon. We played our first date at the Kennedy Center when Donald Trump left it alone. It was a bipartisan and nonpartisan organization.
So the quandary I've read for a lot of the artists who are choosing to or not to perform at the Kennedy Center is, do you abandon that venue and then cede that territory to MAGA, or do you have to stay there, put it in their face, albeit you have to be invited? But I mean, should artists like you or the people on stage be there, or should they come to Chicago?
I'm going to go to Washington, and I'm just going to find another venue. So we're going to be there for all the people of Washington. But let me bring up another point. Let's say I signed my contract. Can I trust he would abide it? No. Did he break the NAFTA agreement? Yes. Did he break the new trade agreement with Canada and Mexico that he made in the final year of his first administration? Yes. He is not trustworthy. He could call 3 months out and say, they're out. I don't like those Hamilton guys.
The show is going to be at 18 West Monroe, that's the CIBC Theater, March 4th, 2026 to April 26th, 2026. Is it going to tour the rest of the country or just Chicago?
Oh, we're always touring. No, we're on tour right now. And and we love Chicago.
Even when it's this cold.
Hey, I know that if I just come back in about 6 weeks, it'll be 100 degrees.
Theater Kid is a Broadway memoir, Jeffrey Sellers' book, and he's in our studio, and he is a seller, which was a great line in the book, too, where you were going to be a Broadway booker, and they said, you have to sell, and you said, well, I am a seller, and they said, what do you mean? He goes, that's my name. I'm Jeffrey Seller. Thanks for coming into the studio today.
What a pleasure, John.